Welcome to Smart Branding, a podcast dedicated to branding, naming, and domain names. I'm Tatiana Bonneau, and with my guests, we try to help you create and grow strong, memorable, and meaningful brands online. I believe time is one of our most precious assets, and so I want to thank you in advance if you decide to spend the next 30 minutes with us. I promise to do my best to make those worth it. Let's go. So my guest today is Lane Kawaoka. He's a seasoned real estate investor and entrepreneur, sharing insights and strategies to help others achieve financial freedom through passive income. Hello, and thank you for joining us, Lane.
Hey, thanks for having me. Aloha, everybody.
So let's start with my classic first question. Give me a bit of a background about yourself. When and how did you start doing what you're doing, and what led to that?
Yeah, so I grew up on this, I call it the linear path. I think a lot of my clients are on, you know, a lot of us were, you know, we weren't poor growing up, but we weren't very wealthy either. We're kind of in this, like, I call it the shrinking middle class, and we're all taught to go to school, study hard, invest in, you know, here 401ks and mutual funds and stocks and bonds. But, you know, I you know, that was the way I was born, you know, to save your money, be very frugal. I eventually became an engineer, you know, went to college, started to work, and I made a good salary. And again, you know, following this linear path of we're all taught to go buy a house to live in, which I don't necessarily think is a good idea for some millennials out there. And when I was starting to work, I was traveling all over for work. So I had this big house to myself, started to rent it out. And that was kind of where this madness started. And I got the taste of cash flow. The tenant was paying down my mortgage. I was getting these tax benefits. And I had, you know, free cash flow to go and do this again and again and again. That was in 2009. In 2015, I had 11 rental properties. And now today, well over 10,000 rental units, $2 billion of assets. And, you know, turned it all into kind of a book and kind of help, you know, people get started in this world.
Wonderful. That's quite a journey. And just before I get into more details about that and what you do, I saw you have, like, you have your name as a domain name, since I work with domain names. So I'm sort of fascinated with how people use them. So you have registered your name as a domain name, where you have the, you know, just about you, your personal brand kind of information. Then you have the Wealth Elevator, Simple Passive Cashflow, .com. What is your experience with naming and domains in general? What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important. It kind of sets the tone, right? I mean, our first brand that we operated out of, I first started to make a podcast back in 2016. That's how we kind of got traction, got popular. That was under the Simple Passive Cashflow URL. The branding was all over the place. I mean, I did it all myself back then. I didn't even use, you know, VAs or anything like that. It was just me. You know, of course, you don't want an engineer doing that type of stuff. So everything was like this, like lime green. It kind of looked like Flubber, the movie Flubber. But it was, I don't know. I thought it was cool, right? Because the whole idea was like, hey, we need to keep this stuff simple for people. And it's all about passive cash flow. Later, I think we made the transition to the Wealth Elevator a little over a year ago, actually, because our new book, which just launched, The Wealth Elevator, which is my third book, is sort of the I guess that the influencer, author, thought leader book that, you know, finally, you know, we've gotten enough content that we fill up like a full 200-page, very concise document. And of course, that's a huge book, but what to pull it all together, I came up with this construct of like, well, there's not really any information out there for people with, you know, $1 million net worth. All the stuff written out there, like Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, it's all written for guys who are just getting started, or, you know, in debt, or under a quarter, $500,000 net worth. And what I realized, and this is kind of my story, right? Like, when I first started, I wasn't broke. I had a good salary. I didn't have any assets, but I, you know, from 2009 to 2015, I just bought little rental properties. So I identified that stage in my life, 2009 to 2015, as the first floor of the Wealth Elevator. The prior stage, which is the basement, and you know, when you start to get into syndications and private placements, I coined the term the second floor, the wealth elevator. Of course, there's the third floor, there's a penthouse, and there's a few floors after, which I put in this kind of handy dandy table. You know, I mean, of course, I'm an engineer, so I got to put things in tables and charts. But this, I mean, there's really no other like book or system out there that kind of puts this into like paradigms, right? Like Malcolm Gladwell, he talks about like, you know, people in paradigms and in wealth building. I think people think that there's like a one size fits all, right? Like I see all these YouTube influencers out there talking about like credit scores and this. That's not the wealth. The wealthy don't really care about that kind of stuff, right? Like after a while, certain things, you know, strategies become on the forefront, and other minutia and noise out there just get people confused, I think.
That's true. That, I mean, I haven't thought about it, but now that you say it, it's fascinating. That I guess there's probably that feeling that when you get to that level, you have it all worked out, and so you don't need any advice, like you don't need any help up to that.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, like I think my goal is to get people to like $4 to $5 million net worth, and I think then you have enough. I know that sounds super privileged and first world problems, but you know, I think a lot of us are trying to set up, you know, maybe if you have a couple kids, you're trying to set up a couple generations below you. And, you know, once you have a couple kids, that money gets diced up two or three times. So $4 million goes to $1.5 million. And $1 million is just nothing these days, you know, especially if you're looking at investing it at 10% or 5% in a T-bill, you know, that just doesn't produce the monthly cash flow that you're needing. So, I mean, that's just another realization. A lot of people think that they have $1.75 million in their late, you know, 50s. You know, that's a good job, right? You're top 1%, I'm sure. But that's just not enough. And, you know, a lot of times too, you can give your kids $4 or $5 million. That's great. But that's sometimes, I think, and, you know, take some backwards in life. That's just too much money. It's probably better to give them $500,000, but all these teachings that we talk about in the Wealth Elevator program and then in our community that, you know, like where like these financial lessons and the network really is kind of what moves it forward. And I'll say one more thing about the brand. Like the first one was like this horrible green color, but as you kind of see here, right, like we've kind of toned things down a little bit. A lot of our members are like in their late 40s, early 50s. You know, I'm kind of getting in my 40s now, like a little bit more of a grown up feel. So it was either blue or red, right? So we picked blue.
I completely agree with you on the, and that's the one thing I picked up from, like, or that kind of stood out to me from what you just said, because I have 4 kids and one of them had just turned 19, and I'm exactly at that level where I'm thinking, like, you don't want to throw him out the door and just leave him with nothing, but you don't want to give them too much so that they don't have to work and, you know, live life themselves and make their own mistakes. And so that's a very interesting stage, I guess, interesting topic. And I love the way how you, very engineer, like, I guess you kind of got that level, you know, 4 or 5 million is too much. 1.5 is good. But I guess that's also individual.
Yeah, individual. Yeah. I mean, there's a term out there, short sleeves. Or if you want to put it more numerically for the engineers to understand, you know, 90% of families' wealth leaves in 2 to 3 generations. And, you know, typically what happens, like, you know, you interact with your kids all the time, right? And I think most times, especially as a business owner or somebody who consciously built their wealth themselves, your kids were around you during that process and you're going to literally beat it into their head, right? But the problem is, I mean, this is sort of a good byproduct of it. Most times your kids will become, you know, high scholars, engineers, doctors, lawyers, people like that in society, but they won't have that entrepreneur grit, and they won't necessarily know how to invest it. And that's where it's that third generation is the ones that are kind of the lost souls out there that kind of blow it, right? Because think about it, their parents, which are your grandkids, your grandkids, when they're looking at their parents, are just high scholars, right? Like, what, I don't know. And your kids are giving their kids everything that they ever wanted. So there's really, you know, they're kind of spoiled in a way. But, you know, my parents always said I was spoiled. But, you know, I mean, that's just everybody saying that. But like in reality, it's that I always blame the generation above. Well, it's because your parenting created this byproduct. But that's why it's important, I think, to get your kids around other investors and people that are in this financial space and understand, you know, you don't just trade time for your money at a good high paid job. If you're a doctor, lawyer, engineer, great, awesome for you, right? A lot of props. I'm sure a lot of people in society think great highly of you. But as far as money making, you're trading time for dollars. And what you need to get to is a point where you're trading those dollars for assets that produce you income or other investments, whether that's real estate that give you tax benefits, or you know, even venture capital or buying businesses. You know, that's kind of the whole idea. But it is a big peer group thing. You are the five people that you hang out with most. And you know, unfortunately, when you go to a job, you're around people who trade time for money.
I love how simply you put it. And so you've been doing that now for quite some time. And I remember, you know, just obviously that's existed way before, but just on my lifetime scale, you know, when the first times I've heard about passive income and how has that evolved over time up till now. But as somebody who's in that, how has it changed over the time that you've witnessed it?
I mean, I think like I started this back in 2016. I always had my little spin on it. Like I was always speaking to myself, you know, the guy in his 20s or 30s working a career that they didn't like, that they made six figures in it. I've seen other people like kind of try and communicate the same ideas. You know, they would always say, you know, you need passive income, you know, right? But it's always like, all right, we need passive income, but it was always like, all right, now we're gonna go sell like LuLaRoe tights or you know, some kind of multi-level marketing, like essential
Yeah,
oils,
there
right? Like
is
you need
that.
passive income, right? Like a slimy kind of way. And again, that I think that was kind of where, like, all right, well, who's the audience, right? Like if you're broke and you don't make $50,000 a year, I mean, you're gonna need more income, right? That's where you are in the wealth elevator, you're in the basement. But if you make a six figures and more importantly, you're able to save $10,000-$20,000 per year, then yeah, let's talk about buying rental properties or investing in syndications and private placements. You know, it depends on where you're at. And I think that's again, like gets lost in the minutia. Very similar to like I think diet and exercise, right? Super, I think very different, but in a way, there's this like, you know, you have these zealots that are like, you can only have 45 grams of carbs and two proteins a day, right? And you have people who are like, no, you can't, you know, you're too much, you're too much. And then you got people who are just trying to like fill their circles, you know, their rings in and get 5,000 steps, like so confused. It's like, so what's the message here, right? Well, different people, if you're trying to be a bodybuilder or a CrossFit athlete, yeah, you're going to need to swallow a different set. But for the general public, or in my case, bringing it back to my world, like, you know, if you're just getting started and you have a decent job, well, here are the things that you should be following. But there's all this other noise out there to like, hey, come into my multi-level marketing program and sell these like info products and products for me. And I think that's what just makes it difficult, I think. And that's why I'm like, well, you need to find other people on the same path, like real people to help you decode all this like minutia and noise out there. But that's the hard part, right? Like, I mean, we're so disconnected these days, and I think that this puts a huge emphasis on community.
Absolutely. And I think a few examples that you just gave, it really actually gave like a bad image to even the term passive income. Like a lot of people by default associated it with exactly with those type of a scammy kind of a ideas and practices.
Yeah, maybe I
So
shouldn't go there, but like, you know, like the Bible, right? I mean, generally it's a good thing,
oh
but some people use that thing for like, you
yeah,
know, they
absolutely.
just twist and turn that thing, you know? I mean, same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree with you. So how does the process work? Now, obviously there are, you said like you've just released the third book, so there is the book where people can pick up the book and you know go through it and work things out sort of on their own or with its help on at their pace. What else do you offer and how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, I think the book offers a pretty good high level of like, hey, here are these floors, and more importantly, where do you fall on this diagram? And then therefore, then you can start to like say, all right, here's what I'm going to do for investing. Here's what I'm going to do for my retirement system. Maybe I don't even have a 401k. Here's what I'm going to do for taxes. And then, you know, we implement privatized banking, right? We try not to rely on banks in the long term. There's other few nuances in the book, but those are like the three big things, like taxes, investing in alternative investments outside of Wall Street, and then privatized banking. So I think that gets you moving. But then, you know, each of those three things, you need to kind of go dive in more deeper. So like the alternative investing side, doing due diligence on deals. I mean, at that point, we have a full e-course that, you know, I mean, if any of the listeners here want to get free access to that, we give a lot of this stuff for free. It's like 8 to 10 hours within an e-course. You just have to make a profile on our website, and then we hook you up with that. On the taxes side, we have, I mean, thewealthelevator.com/tax is kind of our big info page there. Again, all for free. But then, you know, I'm not a CPA or a tax attorney, and I make that very clear. But, you know, I tend to kind of know more useful things than they do, right? At the end of the day, most CPAs and tax folks are just guys who fill in that spreadsheet. They don't know strategy, right? So, but at that point, we refer you out to folks that I've used in the past. But it's important for the user, to kind of know the strategies, so you don't just have what most CPAs do to their clients, which is just the easy, lazy way, where you don't get all these benefits. And then, you know, so it's a lot of it is like going through the process, diving into our website. And then we monetize off of, you know, we have a paid mastermind group for people. Most people are over a couple $1 million net worth. You know, they see that the need for the network and the community that we've built, and then they join there. But you know, again, a lot of things for the on the website for free, and that's kind of the way we monetize at the end, is when people join our network as a paid person, or you know, either invest alongside us. But everything up to that point, our customer journey is pretty much free info.
What do you feel the majority of your clients are getting wrong? Like, is there something you repeatedly see happening and you're like, oh, not that again?
You know, I mean, it's to me, this stuff has changed my life. I mean, I know it works. You have to diversify, of course. You can't just go into like one or two investments. You have to go into a dozen or two and span a long while. I mean, that's just, I think that's investing 101. I do look at the metrics, and you know, I do offer free onboarding calls for people to, you know, of course we want them to go through the curriculum first, because it's a lot of basic FAQs that they go through. But I would say, you know, a third, maybe half of the people, or a little bit more than half, just never move forward. And I think what happens is, like, when people, the person listening to this now may or may not need this at their point of in their life. Of course, if people are listening to my podcast, typically they're already in have an interest in it, but not many people have interest in this type of stuff. And that's why, you know, we're talking about the kids earlier. And you know, within our mastermind group, we always talk about, hey, which of our kids is going to be the patriarch of the you know, the trustee. And one big thing that comes up is like, well, they may not have the interest in it. It's not that they're dumb. It's not like they're bad people. It's not like they don't care. They just don't have an interest in money. And I think that's great, right? Like, I'm actually too much into money, right? And not into like other things like art, and you know, other things that I think humans are generally interested in, to certain categories. But if you're not inherently interested in, like, you know, the credit card hacking, travel rewards, you know, like investing, you're not going to be interested in this stuff. But it's going to take a life moment for you to be like in a pain point to be very interested in this type of material, such as like a job loss, or you got passed up for a promotion, or you know, a lot of our folks are engineers, so they do that spreadsheet and they're like, shoot, I'm not gonna be able to pay for two kids' college and retire. Like, it's just a math thing. And they're like, oh shoot, I better do something about it, right? This, and I think same thing going back to the health and fitness thing. people might have a health scare. People like in my age range, like we're going to the doctors and first five times, and some of us are having these big health scares happen to us. Definitely get our ass on a treadmill, right? For once, right? Like that's the kind of thing. But whether it's a health scare or like a financial scare like this, what I've seen is people go through like a 3-month period where they're super motivated to do things. And we're here to help, right? We have a lot of this free content for you. We have the community. But after 3 months, I think people get complacent and they get okay with the status quo, right? They may be pre-diabetes, going to be diabetes by their late mid-40s for sure, but they've gotten okay with it. And they stop really, making, gains and progress on, on that goal. And I think same thing like finances. And that's what kind of frustrates me. And I think that's kind of where part of it is like, you look around and all your other constituents in the cubicles next to you are, investing in the 401k, doing the normal stuff. White collar professionals, right? Their net worth will likely be $1 million if they don't spend their money like drunken sailors, which I guess is most people. But if they're diligent savers, they'll be all right, right? $1.5 million net worth by the time they retire. By their standards, it's good. But within our world, our standards, the standards are like 3-4 times that number. And when you get around that people, I think that's the key, is to get yourself around the people who are financially, clicking on this level and getting people generally on your trajectory.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right when you mentioned, again, it's because of my kids, I'm always picking up on what you're saying about kids, but that sounds very familiar, where you'd have, and I don't think it's generational, maybe it just feels like it, but like you have kids going, yeah, but why? Like, I don't need that much money. Like, why? And you're like, what are you talking about? But then, yeah, it's as simple as they're just, there's people like that and, the other people.
Yeah. I'll add another thing onto that too, right? Like the Gen Z and I guess those younger generations, they tend to ask, they question things and they ask why a lot. I think that's great. I mean, to me, it's a lot better than the archetype of like, I'm just going to blindly follow what the government tells me to do. Right. I'm just like the 401k, they made this 401k thing and this IRA thing. Wow. Awesome. The government's really looking out for us. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be all right. Like, we all know that that's silly. Right. I mean, I'm a huge questioner. I question everything. And then, that was when I started to have this first rental property way back when in 2000, I think I made this realization in 2010 when I already had this rental property going. I didn't know very much back then, but I do this whiteboard exercise on my website at thewealthelevator.com/returns, where I break down all the returns. And I had this epiphany very early on. I was like, well, I'm making like 20-30% returns on my money with this simple little rental property. Why the heck would I want to put my money into this like 8-10% Wall Street roller coaster? And then I started to realize like, wow, like to use a Wizard of Oz reference, like the guy behind the curtain is not real. This financial world is just a bunch of people, middlemen, certified financial planners taking all your money. And that created the chink in the armor. And then I kind of search for things, and it just the same way TikTok serves political and views that you subscribe to, right? Like, I mean, I guess we can all probably agree, we all like to hear confirming biases that we have, right? Like, I had this idea and this chink in the armor of the financial system, and I kind of seeked it out, but I seeked out real life people, high net worth people, 2, 3, 4, 5 million dollars, a little bit older than I was, but in high ranking professions. And this is the world that I was kind of brought into, where you invest off of Wall Street. You use these different tax strategies well beyond 401ks, Roth IRAs, and you do these types of, strategies. And to me, like, that was kind of what really like bridged me to like, yeah, that was the confirming thing for me, is getting around other people. But unless I went on this arc of like questioning, asking the question why, wouldn't have even like intellectually explored this stuff.
Mm. Have you had people, or do you have people like that you wouldn't advise, wouldn't work with? Is there like some sort of a limit on, who you would be able to work with or not?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like people need to at least like get their finances in order, right? Get out of the basement level of the wealth elevator. I would say to qualify for that, you would need to save at least $10,000 to $20,000 per year after your paycheck. So, like if you make $120,000 a year and you spend 50, 70 grand before taxes on expenses, you're right on that bubble, right? And I think then you're making positive traction financially. And I think like the wealth elevator book would be great for you. And you probably would fall on the first floor of the wealth elevator and go buy some rental properties and you'll eventually ascend up. And that's the whole point is like it took me a long time to, stop buying rental properties and into bigger deals. But, I was following this path. I wish I would have had the system and expedited things and I wouldn't have bought 11 silly rental properties. I would only bought a handful. But that's kind of where I see a lot of people, moving down that trajectory from that path. I would also say the second thing is like, you're getting off the beaten path here. Make no mistake. You're going against normal, conventional wisdom. Like my parents don't know anything about this world I'm in, nor do they trust it. I mean, they're just baby boomers that just happen to get lucky in the best bull market of our generation, of their generation. But like that's kind of one generation looking at today, right? And I would probably have a less more of a pessimistic outlook on the future generations. I don't think you can expect 7 to 9% returns in the S&P 500 or NASDAQ in the future. I just don't think that that's possible. And you have to search for, we call it an alpha, right? Beating the status quo in terms of investing. You have to be empowered and take action on your own for your own finances. And, investing is part of that.
Absolutely. Have you felt, I always ask that question now, have you felt that artificial intelligence boom affecting what you do and how?
I mean, one of the big investment theses that I go off of is, the population growth in America, where generally in China and Asian countries, it's going down. And this fundamental need for housing, especially in the lower middle class, which is, I think, where we specialize in, which is called workforce housing. So we don't, when we buy, investments, we don't buy it to, with the luxury, Class A type of renter in there, nor the middle class, because we all know the middle class is shrinking, and there's this general bifurcation of the economy and the population where the rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. So the middle class are shrinking down to the lower middle class, and that population is getting much bigger. So my investment thesis is always look out 10 years plus ahead. What are the big trends that are going to be around? And to me, it makes more sense that more and more people are going to be needing, today you would think of $900 a month to $1,200 a month apartments. I don't see how there can be displacement in that need. The government, I mean, could turn into China and start building like low income housing, but that would be a little bit on the higher end because it'll be new units. So it doesn't really directly compete, but I mean, it's a changing world out there. And I think that's why a lot of people who have money invest in real estate because it is, all these like AI or these technology advancements, it's not really impacting, our world very much. I mean, sure, if you invest in like industrial storage and Amazon, they figure out a way to get those drones to direct ship things to your house without having to go into warehouse storage, that's a huge displacement for that. And you can bet the price per the rent per square foot on industrial storage may go down by a nickel or quarter. Who knows? Which is actually a lot. But I just don't see how you'll have a huge displacement in residential housing needs, such as apartments or homes. But that's kind of where, like, I mean, I'm just a dumb real estate investor, and that's why I do real estate. The problem with real estate now is like there's a big barrier to entry. So you can't just go buy a house for, the cheapest house that we have folks buying on the first floor of the wealth elevator is a $100,000 house in the Midwest where it's cheaper, and you're going to still need a 20% down payment. So 20, 30 grand right there. But as we all know, like sophisticated business owners know, you want a moat, you want a barrier to entry. So that's why real estate's another good thing. And also the tax benefits you get with it. You depreciate the asset and you can use those losses to offset your other income. But, I mean, I know enough to know that, you don't want to fall in love with one asset class, because we did see commercial real estate go down harder this last year or two than the 2008 financial crisis, which is exactly why you want to get into commercial real estate today. But, each individual asset class is its own separate thing, and that's why it's good to diversify at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a wise advice. So last question. What do you look forward to? What do you have planned? What's exciting you now?
Yeah, I think at one time, I really got zeroed in on like the second floor of the wealth elevator in my book, which is, getting into private placements and syndications, whether that's apartment buildings, self-storage, or even branching out to buying businesses and venture capital. That was, I think, the next frontier of our investor community, and just speaking for myself. And then always trying to figure out, like, well, what are the people who are $50 million net worth doing? What are people above $200 million, the family offices, doing? Like, we interact with them quite often from a buyer seller perspective. And like, how are they doing their finances? And then again, just like how I do for like the guys getting started who have $500,000 net worth trying to get up to 2 million, right? Like, it took me, when I say like 7 years to get there. I think you can get there a lot quicker if you know what the strategy is to use, and you don't buy an extra five or six rental properties that are just a headache. Just, I'm sure there are shortcuts, right? For going from $5 million to $10 million. And that's what I want to, but I want to know what's, I need to know what's on the next pedestal and higher, so I can start to figure out what the corners are to cut them.
That's great. Well, let's hope next time we speak, you're gonna be there. That's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, I'll just add another chapter on the book, you know,
Yeah.
another floor.
No, that's makes it sound very simple. Very cool. Well, thank you so much. That's been an absolute pleasure. We'll include in the write-up all the links and everything that you mentioned where people can get to those resources. I'm sure that'll be very useful and interesting. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Welcome to Smart Branding, a podcast dedicated to branding, naming, and domain names. I'm Tatiana Bonneau, and with my guests, we try to help you create and grow strong, memorable, and meaningful brands online. I believe time is one of our most precious assets, and so I want to thank you in advance if you decide to spend the next 30 minutes with us. I promise to do my best to make those worth it. Let's go!